So you're brief.
Good morning. I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee to order on Tuesday, March 5th. There is a quorum present, and our first order of business today will be approval of the minutes. Representative Hewitt, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Is there any discussion to the amendment or to the minutes? Seeing no discussion to the minutes, all those in favor of adoption of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the minutes are approved and adopted. We are going to first start with House File 3677. Welcome to the committee, Representative Elkins. I will move that House File 3677 be before the committee. Would you like, we will re-refer this bill to veterans.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Chair Newman would like to include this potentially in his omnibus, veterans omnibus bill.
Okay, and with that, I would ask you to please discuss your bill.
Yep. This is a very simple bill. Under current state law, counties are authorized to reimburse veterans organizations up to $300 for their expenses in creating Veterans Day Memorial Day celebrations, I'm sorry. And this bill would extend that to include Veterans Day as well. And that's pretty much it. So I have with me Dr. Christy Janigo, who's going to make with the American Legion, who's going to make a brief statement.
Dr. Janigo, if you'll identify yourself for the record and please begin your testimony.
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, Representative Elkins, thank you for introducing this bill today. My name is Dr. Christy Janigo, and I'm the American Legion Department of Minnesota Legislative Chair. I also represent the Minnesota Association of County Veterans Service Officers, our professional organization, because for my day job, I'm an assistant county veterans service officer and a veteran myself. When I was a young girl growing up in rural North Dakota, I attended Memorial Day and Veterans Day observances with my granddad, who served in the Army in Okinawa in World War II. I learned respect for the flag and patriotism from a young age through the honor guard rituals and gun salutes on those holidays. I'll never forget the image of the senior veterans, including my granddad, people who bravely defended their country from tyranny and attacks overseas. This bill will not move mountains, but it will mean a lot for local communities across Minnesota, and it will impact the young girls and boys like it did for me. This bill does not mandate for counties to fund Veterans Day observances, simply provides the option. County Veterans Service Officers, like our association president, Josh Benega of Lacaparral County, are usually the agents who administer this funding to their local Legion, VFW, or other congressionally chartered veteran service organizations. It strengthens the relationships between veterans and county government, which increases their chances of seeking out assistance that can provide life-changing support to those who served. Thank you again for hearing this important bill, which means so much to the veterans community.
Thank you. Are there any other testifiers? Okay. So I'll bring it to member questions or comments. Are there any questions or comments, members? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. Representative Elkins, in the county that I live, we do give dollars to all of the veterans groups. Some of our veterans groups, as you know, decrease in the numbers, difficulty sometimes finding people to join for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And so the monies do help defray their costs for the activities that they do, which benefit really the entire county. So thank you.
Representative Kosnick.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious to the author. What of the Minnesota Association of Counties? They reached out. Did they take a position on this?
Representative Elkins.
Madam Chair, I haven't heard from them. This is permissive. No county is required to do this.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Nadeau, did I see your hand? No.
No, thank you.
Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Elkins, Dr. Janigo, thanks for being here. Thanks for it's permissive language, so it will allow for good things to happen. Navy dad myself, go Navy, beat Army all day long. But just wanted to point out that this is a way to honor the 1% of the people who serve from our nation in the armed forces. And given that it is permissive, I I'm still not 100% clear as to why it has to be passed for permissive languages, as I understood that counties have the purview to do so, but if it's not the case, then we can talk about that another time. But go Navy, beat Army.
Thank you. Representative Elkins, did you want to address the last issue? Or
This is a very simple bill.
Thank you so much for bringing it forward. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Janigo, I so appreciate the work that you do for our veterans every day. And I know that you do it in your community. I know you do it for the state. So thank you very much for that. And with that, members, I see no further questions or discussions. All those in, I'll renew my motion to re-refer House File 3677 to the Veterans Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails, and House File 3677 is re-referred to Veterans. Thank you very much. Okay. Next, we have before us House File 3606, Representative Chair Stevenson. And I will move House File 3606 be before the committee, and it is our intention to lay this bill over. Representative Stevenson, if you would like to discuss your bill.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the time today to discuss House File 3606, which relates to a board with a very long acronym for a name that governs a number of professions, including architects, landscape folks, engineers, and other professions. The bill is pretty straightforward. It requires that the board send email notice to members before their license is up for renewal. I have a constituent who had an unfortunate experience with this and has been advocating for change. I would draw members' attention to, in your packets, you have letters both from the Society of Professional Engineers, as well as AIA, which is the Architects Association, in support of the bill. I will also say, I don't know how many members here are members of licensed professions of one species or another. I am a lawyer, so I have to renew my license on an annual basis, and I get email reminders from my licensing board. This is just, I think, good practice. I know that there are some materials in here also indicating that the board has some voluntary email newsletters that include information about renewal, but this bill would require more direct communication to people. So I do have, Madam Chair, a constituent here today who'd like to speak to her experience.
If you're a constituent, would come forward. If you'd state your name for the record, and then please begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Cleaver and members of the committee. My name is Andrea Peschel-Swan. I appreciate your time to listen to my story today and why this is important. I'm going to get emotional.
Just take a deep breath. You're safe. It's a safe space.
I'm proud to say that I'm the byproduct of the American dream. My parents immigrated to our beautiful state from communist-occupied Slovakia in the late 60s for a better chance for themselves and for their children to realize their dreams. I first became licensed in New York in 2003, where I worked post-college, and when I moved back home to Minnesota, I became licensed here in 2005. In 2008, with the support of my parents and husband, I decided to take that bold leap to go out on my own, specializing what I'd realized was my true passion, single-family residential design. Even though I don't need to maintain my license to design homes, I do so in order to call myself an architect and to call my firm an architectural firm. And in June of 2016, I made the clerical error of forgetting to renew my Minnesota state license. All I can say in all honesty is that I made a mistake, but more importantly, I didn't realize it until 2022, which means I missed renewal in 2018 and 2020 as well. Had I received any notification of any kind from my board, either pre or post-lapse, I would have maintained it as I have in New York State, who I received both mail and email reminders from. I also presume that by acquiring and maintaining my continuing ed credits and renewals via the AIA platform, which is my professional organization, there was automatic coordination with the state. This was also an honest misunderstanding on my part. It wasn't until July of 2022, through the courtesy of a colleague, that I realized my license had lapsed. When I called in to renew, it was then that I was informed that my license had lapsed since 2016. I was shocked. Once I realized it, all I cared about was fixing it. The process for reinstatement was surprisingly straightforward. It seemed too good to be true, and it was. Days after receiving my reinstatement letter, I received a letter of complaint from the board. They wouldn't even confirm that it was they who filed the complaint when I first called in, something I found very discourteous and unprofessional. My simple clerical error has become a catalyst for what has been nothing short of an inquisition by my board's complaint committee and its executive director. Their year-long investigation has caused enormous stress, both emotionally as well as financially. I have felt helpless, intimidated, and bullied. And what's at stake now for me? Now, professionally, with their proposed stipulation and consent order, is more than just financial. My reputation is at stake, given how they publish all orders on their website and newsletters. This usually offers water cooler fodder each month they send these out. But there's also the financial penalty at stake. At $27,000, their proposed fine is exponentially higher than any past precedent we can find. And as I'm in the process of contesting, I'm still trying to understand what actual egregious act I committed towards any single person or entity of the public harming their health, safety, or welfare to be deserving of what they're proposing. If one good thing can come from this, it would be the passing of this bill, which I know wholeheartedly will prevent what I'm currently going through from happening to future licensed professionals within my board's umbrella, especially small business owners such as myself, who don't have administrative resources on staff, whose responsibility it is to remind their professionals to renew. Thank you, Representative Stevenson, for taking my call back in October of 2023. As you know, I cried in relief for your willingness to listen and for your help in offering to help draft this bill. I had the opportunity to review the handout the executive director prepared for today. I can assure you that I have not seen most of what is illustrated, especially the oversized mail postcard reminder, which I'd appreciate getting the most, besides the direct email reminders. Thank you for your time and consideration. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Also, we have today two other testifiers who are on the list. Doreen Johnson, if you'd please come forward. Are you planning on co-presenting or are you separate?
I'm presenting on behalf of the board, and Paul Brandt is here on behalf of an individual licensee. He's also a member on the board.
All right, perfect. If you'd please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
I'd be happy to. Good morning, everyone. I'm Doreen Johnson. I am the executive director of the Board of Architecture, Engineering, Land Surveying, Landscape Architecture, which is geologists and soil scientists and certified interior designers. I've been with the state agency since 1996. I was the first investigator, became the acting executive director in 1998, and became the executive director in 1999. I'm very familiar with the renewal process. I appreciate the opportunity to address the group and to sit for any questions. I gave you an example of the 2022-2024, the last renewal cycle, so that you can see what the board does. We have had I ask you to look at the actual renewals. We do have a voluntary email subscription service, and many people sign up there for that, not just the licensees, but the professional societies, administrative assistants, and they received by email. But I gave you the example of the last renewal cycle. All of those emails, we have the subscription list that also you can sign up for, and you get continuing education. We get a lot of applicants that sign up for that, for rule changes, that sort of thing. We mail to current addresses the double-sided postcard, and then also notify the licensees when their license is expired. If people are lapsed for an extended period of time, as you can imagine, we send our renewal notices to the people that are up for renewal. If you have had multiple lapsed licenses, you know, over several years, you wouldn't be listed as a current licensee. We don't go backwards and find other people that were not current licensees. So that's one of the issues. So we promote it on every single page, and we do hard copy mails. One of the concerns, or two of the concerns that I have on this, is not everyone wants email for our licensees. I appreciate that this bill has both. I also want to ask that if this bill goes forward, that we get some classification, perhaps data classification or clarity. Under Minnesota Statutes 13.41 on licensing data, there is information that we collect under licensing data. Under Minnesota Statute, under the Government Data Practices Act, 13.356 is personal contact and online account information. received by the government entity for notification purposes or part of a subscription list for the entity's electronic. The private information or private data on individuals includes the telephone number, the email address. So this bill has some notification issues that would make that email address perhaps public information where it appears to be private under the data practices. And that's, I'm not an attorney. I work as the executive director, but I did ask our legal counsel on this. And so one of the things I would also seek is that we maybe get some data classification. So should this bill go forward, we don't have to go and ask for a ruling from the board of, for the data practices on it.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we will have Paul Brandt come forward. That's okay. I'm glad you're up on both legs.
Good morning.
If you would please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Paul Joseph Brandt. I'm a professional soil scientist and member of the Board of Architecture, Engineering, Land Surveying, Landscape Architecture, Geoscience, and Interior Design. We refer to it as ACELIDGE, or the board for short. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Cleavorn, for allowing me to testify. Personal opinion, with no disrespect to anyone, this is a situation looking for a problem. The professional societies, which I am a member of, start over a year in advance looking, you know, reminding our members to get all their classes in, ethical, 2 hours of ethics training, and then 22 hours at minimum of professional training relating to your area of expertise. That being aside, when the license is issued, we're all told it's right on the license that we have to renew it every 2 years. We're professionals. This should not come as a surprise to any of us. In fact, I have seen more angst and trepidation over getting your classes in because it's one of the major focuses of all the professional societies. It's just an area that's constant among us. Being on the board, I've seen the letters sent out for expired license. I've seen the communication from the board, and while as attorneys, I'm sure you'll understand it must be adversarial in part, I have seen it and doesn't appear to be overly adversarial. No one is being accused of anything. They're all just stating the fact. We take, you know, lapses very seriously, and we try to do the minimum we have to do, and we try to keep it consistent between all people that come before us. I'd like to just say that, in reality, this isn't fiscally neutral. It will cost the board some money to put this together. And personally, I would just as soon not have my personal data sent, sold on a mailing list. The board has a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week website with a toggle on it that if you don't know the licensee's number, if you don't know the licensee's name, you can go, if you've got the first initial of their last name, you can scroll through all licensees. The information is available. It isn't convenient to be able to put out a mass mailing, but it is available to everybody. Also, if you're a professional and you're in practice, you are most likely listed on numerous social media sites, advertising sites with your firm's website. So if someone wants to gather the data for a specific purpose, the data is available without forcing us to, to try to go through the Data Practices Act without having to, spend money, because the information is already out there. So I guess that's what I have to say. Thank you very much for your time, Representative Cleavorn and the committee. And I would suggest that not a short session, this may not be a subject that necessarily needs to be visited for too much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Members, we will move to your, would you like to comment or would you wait till member questions?
I'm happy to answer questions, Madam Chair.
All right, let's move on to member questions. We have two other bills to get to today, so. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, in my business, I get a mental license every year and I get a tobacco license every year. You know, how are we gonna expand this horizon? Because I don't get emails on it, and granted, being a business owner, my company emails all over and everything like that. Are we going to, is this gonna set a precedence to start expanding all these licenses to make sure we get notifications? Because every year with those licenses, it's my job to look for the date when they expire, and I'll get a letter in the mail from the county or from whoever it's from. But if, I guess, in that option, we don't have an option for an email, but are we gonna, will this expand more of that into the government?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Joy. Well, I certainly think that licenses renewal, we should recognize the modern age and shift to email notifications for people for license renewal. As I mentioned, my, as a professional, I'm a lawyer, I get not just one, but multiple emails in advance of when my license is renewed. It probably is also the most cost-effective way to notify people and direct them to where they need to go. So I think that's the modernization aspect. I certainly would favor us moving in that direction more generally. I think a lot of boards already do that, and I think it makes sense. But this bill is just this board.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Stevenson, for the bill. This is a pretty important one, as somebody that's probably held four professional licenses at a time and continued CEUs. It's hard to keep track of this, so I really empathize with the testifier earlier. The question that I have for this particular thing, and I don't know if I'm going out of the scope here, but what is the remedy if someone lets their license lapse? You know, because we have a shortage of workers, and EMS especially, or wherever, we have this problem where were they notified when they lapsed or whatever, but what is the remedy? Can they get their license back easy, or do they got to go all the way back through a cantankerous problem?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, I think Ms. Johnson might be better to answer that question.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson.
Good morning. Yes, so depending on the length of lapse, so if you've already done your continuing education and it's mm-hmm. a one, you know, you're still within that cycle, you just do the late renewal. You pay the $30 extra late fee, you report your continuing ed. When you are multiple renewal cycles, so we renew the licenses every 2 years, you have to do a reinstatement. You have to show us that you have completed the 48 hours of the statute says up to 48 hours of continuing education. You pay your late fee and you go, you can get your license back. That doesn't mean that there might not also be a second prong of unlicensed practice. So if we believe that there might be unlicensed practice, people get their license renewed, we still pursue and look at whether or not there was unlicensed practice from the time that you let your license lapse to the time that your license was renewed by the state. So we don't stop that cycle when we believe there may be unlicensed practice. You get to renew your license. There still may result in an investigation for unlicensed practice for during the time frame in which your license was lapsed. You have to have a license to practice the professions.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from Chair Freiberg.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair Cleaborn. This seems like a pretty straightforward bill. I mean, the key language in it just says the board must send a notice by email. I mean, I was kind of surprised to hear some of the testimony against it. It seemed a little overwrought. And the final testifier mentioned a cost, and I noticed we do have a fiscal note of $24,000, which isn't a ton, I realize, in the grand scheme of things, but maybe the testifier could speak to, I mean, does it really cost $24,000 to send a few emails? I mean, like, I'm an attorney as well, and the email notification I get is very handy and helpful in renewing. So I guess I was just a little surprised to see the fiscal note.
Ms. Johnson.
Representative, thank you for the opportunity to do that. There's a couple of things. All of our licenses will have to be modified. That is data that has to be programmed in-house. All the forms will need to be redone. We have to send out notifications that we're going to be doing this because it says if you don't have an email, we will be doing a mail. So it's not the actual push out the email that's going to absorb the cost. It's that there are costs to every single form notification and our database. So for small agencies, which we are a very small agency, we would have to reprogram, rewrite all of the forms and write the programming behind that, as well as do notification because our rules would need to be modified as well. That's for whether they're expensive. It's not the pushing out the email. It's all of the materials that notifies the licensee that this would be a change.
Thank you. Any follow-up? Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm pleased to see the fiscal restraint of my colleague across the aisle. And I think that before we even move forward with this, we should have Representative Stevenson, without looking at notes, give us the full name of this board without...
Oh, man, don't do that to me.
So...
The board.
The board.
The board. So I had the similar question that Representative Freiberg did, that you know, working in the IT industry, I'm just wondering, can the board... I'm just going to call the board, absorb this in their, because many have IT hours that they either get from Minute or they're having a contract on their own. I'm getting a smile that's like, oh, that's not the reality. But so working in IT industry, I do understand that that's an average cost per hour. My wife is an engineer, so she gets these things as well. She's an industrial engineer. So I do understand that there is a need, and I don't see that this is going to cause the world to end if we email people as opposed to snail mail people. And I'm sure that that there may be some people in this database that are on the safe at home list, and we're going to make sure that we program those correctly so that this is still preserving that privileged information and keeping it private. So I hate spending money, as you all know, but I would love to find a way to have this be absorbed inside the budget of the board, as opposed to having to appropriate $24,000 to get it there.
Thank you, Lead Nash.
Representative Cleavorn, Chair Cleavorn, and members of the committee. It's all lovely to say it can just be absorbed by the board. We have a staff of six. We have to go out for contract. We've had 50% turnover. I have this board as well as the Board of Accountancy. So we have to find somebody to do that work. We don't have the staff any longer to do it. For those, I'm a big fan of Minute. What they have done for security is absolutely critical to the infrastructure of this state. But the reality is they don't come in and do our programming.
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, I noticed in the fiscal note, because I think like many members was a little surprised by the fiscal note, that most of the cost is for a mailing to notify people that you will be getting emails. And I would really question whether that's necessary. The bill indicates that if they don't have an email, that they'd have to send out a mailing. The board has represented to you today that that's their practice, to send out mailings to people already. So there shouldn't be a cost for that. I don't see why we would send out a mailing saying you're going to get an email. I think we could probably just do the email. I don't necessarily quibble with the idea that there might be a modest cost to set up the programming, but the mailing seems to me to be unnecessary.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Sorry, Lead Nash, please proceed.
Thank you. And it does hurt my head to think that people in this modern time would not have an email that they would furnish to the board. I've had emails since it first became a thing. Well, I think the earth was still cooling then, but I get it. It's one of the necessities that we're looking at. But I do know that there are probably folks who have been an engineer since the 70s, and they may be Luddites or neo-Luddites, and they don't want...
Please don't talk about me in that manner.
If the shoe fits, Madam Chair. But I get it. I would hope that we could find perhaps a cheaper way of getting this done, and hope that it is indeed a one-time cost for all of the things that have been noted as one-time costs, because when we deliver almost everything electronically, when I can order a pizza on my phone and have it show up, you would hope that a group of engineers could get to the point where they could renew online or be notified online. So thank you.
Thank you, Lead Nash. And Representative Bonner, I'm sorry I didn't see your name earlier.
That's right. Thank you. I'll try to be quick here. So first, I just wanted to be clear, because I think earlier it was mentioned that if this information, if you move to an email system, that now those email addresses would be public, or that it would be sold somewhere or something like that. But I understand earlier from the conversation that this information is already published and made public. So I don't know that that would actually be an issue. So just wanted to be clear about that. The other one is, and this is getting again to this cost, and I think we're all on this fiscal piece, but if I understood correctly, and maybe you can tell me, you had suggested that there are regular mailings that go out for renewal or for what have you, right? And instead of sending a separate email or a separate mailing to tell people that you're now going to email them, couldn't you just incorporate some language onto the existing mailings that go out as they go out? And maybe this is, if it's necessary, to put that comfort language into the bill so that we phase in that, so we're not creating a separate expense, but maybe just putting some language on the bottom of the postcard or whatever goes out that says, congratulations, we've shifted. Now you'll be getting reminder emails. That's all it needs to say. So I guess, and if you would like to opt out, send it here, something like that. But it feels like that would be a way to also bring down this fiscal note and not duplicate efforts, but to do so in a more cost-effective manner.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. And with that, we will lay this bill over. If there's work that you want to continue to do with the board, please feel free to do so. But with that, I believe our discussion for today has concluded. Thank you, Chair Stevens.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we will move on to House File 3483. Representative Feist, we have quite a few testifiers today, so I'm going to ask the committee to be very succinct, and we will try to get all of this done by 25 minutes to 10, if that's possible. All right. I will move that House File 3483 be before the committee. If you would please speak to your bill.
Would you like me to address the amendment?
Do you prefer to do the amendment first?
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead then, and we'll be speaking to the A6.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee. The amendment simply reflects some input by the Minnesota Council on Disability, the Minnesota Hospital Association, and the elder and disability law experts to get the bill in the shape we'd like it today.
All right. And then, so I will officially move the A6 as we move to discussion. Are there any questions to the A6?
Madam Chair.
Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A6 posted late last night did not meet the amendment deadline, and whether it was technical or an oversight, my thought is that we have rules for the posting of amendments, and either we can waive the rules for the balance of session, or we stick to the rules and recognize that even though it was relatively benign in nature, that the amendment posted late and didn't meet the deadline.
Thank you, Lead Nash. And because the amendment did not meet the deadline, what we've decided to do is, instead of moving the bill out of committee, we are going to lay it over so that the opportunity to make any changes is there, so that we can go ahead and hear the bill and have it worked on.
Thank you for that, Madam Chair.
And we are going to adopt the A6 today, but we'll allow the bill to continue to be worked on. Is there any further discussion to the A6? Oh, Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Feist, for bringing this forward. Can you, I read through the amendment. I'm sorry I didn't I didn't really read through it as deeply as I'd like to. Does the amendment address the challenge that hospitals are having right now with guardians and discharging those patients? And can you tell me how it does it in this amendment, please?
Representative Weiss.
Yep. Thank you. And thank you, Representative Nadeau, for the question. So the language that we included at line 1.14 on the A6 amendment was worked on in conjunction with the Hospital Association. And my understanding is that that language gets at this very issue. So identifying and understanding alternatives to guardianship whenever possible to meet the need of patients and the challenges of providers of the delivery of health care, behavioral health, and residential and home-based services. So I think this gets at the continuum of care issue. And as people need to transition from a hospital setting to a long-term care setting, looking at the role of guardianship in that transition.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau.
And just a quick follow-up. With these, as far as the courts are involved, did they also agree that this would, I'm not saying the courts are dragging their feet with these hearings, but I know that that's also been an issue. Will this amendment does it assist in that, or is it silent there?
Representative Feist.
So the goal is for this to be one of the focuses of the task force. And my understanding from the Hospital Association is that this would encompass like that constellation of issues and would allow the task force to focus on this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if that's the case, this is a really good amendment then.
Thank you about it. I think we're going to pause just for a moment. And Mr. Gehring, if you would like to speak to why we had an A5 and an A6.
Madam Chair and committee members, so the second engrossment of this bill didn't get posted until after the floor session yesterday, which is after the committee amendment deadline. And so to have the page and lines match up to the version of the bill that was in committee, we had to update the A5 to reflect the A6. There's no substantive change between the A5 and the A6. It's just getting the page and lines matched up to the proper engrossment. As I said, the engrossment wasn't posted until after the floor session, so that's the reason why the technical change had to be made.
So pagination, not substance.
Correct.
Thank you very much. Okay. Are there further questions to the A6? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A6, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails and the A6 is adopted. Okay. Would you like to go on to the substance of the bill now? Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee. So I'm really gratified to be working on House File 3483 in the Senate. This is a bipartisan bill. Senator Limmer is a co-author, and this is a nonpartisan issue that we should all be very concerned about. This bill protects the rights of 35,000 Minnesotans subject to guardianship who are among our most vulnerable residents. At the outset, I would like to note that I've had several productive meetings and emails in the past week with representatives of the professional guardians who have expressed concerns with the language as introduced. Based on these conversations, we have made several amendments to the language and to take into account their perspectives. And I've really appreciated the dialogue, and that dialogue is ongoing. House File 3483 corrects confusing statutory language relating to immunity for guardians created by a 2022 Court of Appeals case that held that a guardian receives blanket immunity for any acts in the provision of care, such as providing no food, no water, and even proactively harming an individual leading to their death. Most states have little or no immunity for guardians. Minnesota is believed to be the only state now to have blanket immunity for guardians. The goal here is to get Minnesota back in line with other states that have limited liability for guardians. The interrelated goal of this bill is to create a task force convened by the Minnesota Council on Disability to address the problematic status quo for guardians and Minnesotans under guardianship. The purposes enumerated in this bill will explore the practical and philosophical questions underlying our goal of ensuring that vulnerable Minnesotans are able to live a full life with as much autonomy and agency as possible. Since the focus of this committee stop is the task force, I will not discuss the liability language at length. And also you're running behind, so you would prefer not. But I would just like to emphasize that even those who have expressed concerns with the original language have told me that there is not a single person who does not agree that the statutory language around guardian liability needs to be updated. Clarity in the law is required to ensure that there is no ambiguity regarding whether guardians should be held accountable, no matter how egregious or harmful the guardian's act or omission. Further, this language, which has been amended based on stakeholder input, strikes the right balance in creating liability for everyday decision-making between creating liability for everyday decision-making by guardians and those acts or omissions that shock the conscience and cause severe or irreparable harm. As we discuss this bill, we need to center the needs of people under guardianship in the conversation. We need to remember that the current status of the law does not protect Minnesota's most vulnerable residents. These are the Minnesotans who are least able to advocate for themselves here at the Capitol and in their own homes, and we need to center them in this discussion. This bill will take important steps in protecting these individuals and advancing the state of guardianship in Minnesota in the long term through the creation of this task force. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Feist. And with you today, I'm just going to say who's I'm calling forward and then who's on deck, if that's all right. So first, we will have Trevor Turner with the Minnesota Council on Disabilities. And Mr. Turner will be followed by Chris Sundberg. When you're ready, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Cleborne and members of the committee. My name is Trevor Turner, and I am the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability. And I'm here today to advocate for the passage of House File 3483, which establishes the task force on guardianship reform. Over the years that I have served Minnesotans with disabilities, I've heard countless stories of those under guardianship who have faced abuse, neglect, and the violation of their basic human rights. And many individuals under guardianship are at risk of exploitation and neglect due to inadequate safeguards and alternative pathways to guardianship. When I have sat down with constituents and stakeholders who are advocating for guardianship reform, I have asked, what needs to change? And the answers vary widely. And a task force on guardianship reform is necessary to first, as a necessary first step in convening the multitude of stakeholders and advocates to produce a cohesive policy proposal that will update our guardianship system for the 21st century. And as well as make explore alternatives to guardianship, like supported decision making. Additionally, we must find better pathways for individuals with disabilities to end their guardianship if they wish to do so and is appropriate. Currently, the process for terminating guardianship can be so complex and challenging, making it difficult for individuals to regain control over their lives. We need to streamline this process and ensure that individuals have access to the necessary resources, knowledge, and support to end their guardianship if they so desire. And finally, the establishment of a task force on guardianship reform is vital to addressing these pressing issues, reforming the guardianship system, and exploring alternatives to Minnesotans with disabilities in our state. I would like to thank Representative Feist for carrying this bill, and I urge members of this committee to support House File 3483 and support the lives of Minnesotans with disabilities. Thank you, and I'm here for questions.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll move to Chris Sundberg, who will be followed by Ellen Smart. When you're ready, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Cleborne and members of the committee. I'm Chris Sundberg. I'm Executive Director of Elder Voice Advocates. We are a nonprofit that advocates for quality care and protection of rights for people with disabilities as well as elders. Since our inception in 2017, guardianship rights violations and neglect issues have been a frequent problem for these vulnerable adults. As Representative Feist said, Minnesota is the only state that now grants complete immunity. We don't grant this sort of blanket immunity to providers such as childcare, government workers, financial advisors, beauticians, and even doggy daycare providers. This dangerous precedent must be addressed now to protect the rights and safety of those under guardianship. This bill would also establish a task force on guardianship to examine and make recommendations to address guardian shortages, compensation, funding, and standards of practice. Importantly, the task force will also review less restrictive alternatives to guardianship that support individuals in making their own decisions and managing their own affairs, while still providing assistance and protection when needed. Additionally, the transparency of this task force is critically important as it publicly hears from experts with diverse perspectives, listens to the lived experiences of these vulnerable adults, and makes recommendations for public policy solutions. In conclusion, please place the protection of and the legal rights of vulnerable adults over the negligent guardian. Blanket immunity is grossly inappropriate, and the need for the task force to pursue thoughtful public policy discussion and remedy is essential. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, Ellen Smart, followed by Rosalie Eisenreich. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ellen Smart. I'm a staff attorney at Legal Aid's Legal Services Advocacy Project. Thank you for allowing Legal Aid to testify today in support of House File 3483. As you have heard, the bill before you is because of a guardian's egregious dereliction of duty, where the person subject to guardianship was a victim of horrific acts at a long-term care facility. As Representative Feist said, previously, guardians had blanket immunity to commit horrific acts. The Minnesota Court of Appeals ruled in that case that the plain language of the statute grants the guardian immunity from liability for negligence in the performance of the guardian's duty. I think we all agree that we want to encourage guardians to provide these necessary services. However, I think we also all agree that guardians should be held accountable for shocking acts of negligence and cruelty. This bill strikes a balance. It sets a standard for liability while providing assurance that day-to-day decisions of a guardian will not lead to litigation. The task force section of the bill, which is so important, will help to address gaps in our current guardianship laws that will support guardians and better serve the subjects of guardianship. Legal Aid encourages the passage of House File 3483. This bill will benefit the low-income clients and clients with disabilities that Legal Aid serves. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Next, Rosalie Eisenreich, followed by Shirley Olson. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn and members of the committee. My name is Rosalie Eisenreich, and I am the Strategic Initiatives Director at SEMSIL, a nonprofit led by people with disabilities, created by people with disabilities, and continues to be consumer controlled. I testify on behalf of our invaluable community members in support of House File 3483 with the proposed changes in the A5 and A6 amendment. People with disabilities are not vulnerable because of their disability. Our vulnerability is because we exist in a culture that was historically built to exclude or exploit our bodies. This fact has not left our current statutes and practices, but has evolved in different ways under the guise of care. According to the National Core Indicators, people under guardianship are less likely to have control of where they live, how they spend their time, what they spend their money on, and are more likely to be unemployed or underemployed and receive adequate health care. These national statistics reflect circumstances that we at SEMSIL have witnessed and more sinister violations as well. Guardians abuse or neglect individuals without recourse. People without guardianship are coerced into making decisions by a provider who controls their housing, or a person is placed under wrongful guardianship without due process. These are only a few of the many examples of how people with disabilities continue to have their autonomy stripped from them in our state. And this isn't history. This is last year and into this year. We are here to stand with our community and educate the public that we need a task force to investigate, deliberate, and provide recommendations to reform where accountability has lacked for so many decades. People with disabilities are American citizens who deserve equal opportunity, and we ask you to support House File 3483 so that balance of our freedom with appropriate care can become a reality. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Shirley Olson, followed by Robert McLeod. Welcome, and if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Shirley Olson, and I am Director of Guardianship Services for Presbyterian Family Foundation, and I'm here today to speak to you as a guardian, conservator, trustee. I've been doing this work for 32 years across two different agencies. Although we agree that a task force is perhaps going to be very beneficial to all of us, we don't agree that any bill should be just pushed forward because it could be a knee-jerk reaction. We do think that things such as, we need to look at things such as a task force that addresses everything across the board, i.e. we look at decision-making, supportive decision-making. We think the liability piece of this, which is the thing that most guardians and conservators will give you pause about. We think that whole liability piece is interconnected with the other issues of training and retention of new guardians. There aren't enough good guardians. Investment in systems to provide supervisions of guardian standards of practice, access to justice for persons subject to guardianship, and more. So we agree, and we really, really want to work with the folks bringing this bill forward. It should be referred to the committee, though, for thorough discussion and greater consensus. We can all point to sensational things that happen across the board in every kind of situation, every kind of profession. We're just asking that we take a look at this and realize that this could have exactly the negative effect you don't want it to have on those we serve. So I just want you to know that we will continue fighting to make sure that this bill encompasses the very people that we serve and the very folks. I think she is very, very much well-intentioned. But I think at some point here we have to look at the cost of this to all, and we hope that we can work together on it.
Thank you for your testimony, and I'll just interject quickly. Representative Feist is awesome about continuing to work on a bill. This bill is being laid over, so there is opportunity for you to continue to do that good work together. And I think we all agree we want everyone safe and healthy, and protection goes both directions.
It does.
So thank you very much for your testimony today. You. Next, we will have Robert McLeod.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Robert McLeod, attorney at law. Been practicing in this area for most of my professional career. And I believe we had a conference call last Friday with Representative Feist, our Zoom call. I think there were about 39 people in attendance. I think it was made loud and clear that people are getting out of the business just because of this legislation, in its proposed state, that they've made it very clear they can't do business with this legislation. No one is saying that, well, there is no such thing as blanket immunity. It's really disappointing to hear those words. But I guess they're talking points and you run with it. But no one is saying that we shouldn't work on the legislation. What we're begging for is to sit down and work on the legislation language together. One important factor is resignation, to be able to get out of it, particularly for the people, you know, you represent your guardian for your aunt, your guardian for your nephew, and now you find out that you're a target. The personal injury lawyers have put a target on your back. They have to be able to get out. They didn't sign up for this, and they have to be able to get out. And more importantly, the court has to be able to let you out, because there's nobody to replace you. That's what's going on in the hospitals, is people are in the hospital with no capacity. And you can't do substitute decision making at that point. You need a guardian. And at this point, who's going to step forward and be the guardian? I will not represent guardians anymore. It's too much liability. And in that phone call, people are saying we have to get out. It's too dangerous with this legislation. So I guess what we would like, and I want to be very clear, Representative Feist, I agree with you, has been very wonderful of trying to communicate with us and work with us, and that is most appreciated. I guess we would continue to ask that this be paused for a minute and allow us to work on words and legislation that'll work, that will hold people accountable, but also allow the system to work and work well. That's what we're begging for. When 39 people are on a Zoom call saying, please, let's do that. That's what we're hoping. And I want to be very clear, Representative Feist has been very good at it, but that's what I'm here to beg for, is that the legislation be paused so we can work on some good language.
Thank you very much. Those are all of the testifiers that I have on the list at this time. Representative Feist, I'd like to move to member questions. Are you all right with that? Members, do you have any questions regarding the bill? Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Feist. You always take on these super complicated issues, and I appreciate that about you. I have a couple of questions. I think, are conservators provided immunity under current law?
Representative Feist.
So I don't know that I can precisely answer your question, but basically our understanding before the Zika decision was that there was some level of liability for guardians, that if they did something like truly egregious that shocked the conscience, like something like providing for no food or water, that there would be some level of civil liability. So the Zika decision interpreted the law to say that there was absolute immunity under civil law, which is separate from probation law and the probation process. So for example, if somebody thought the guardian was not letting them spend their money appropriately or was forcing them to live somewhere that they didn't want to live, there's a process for that, which is separate from what we're talking about here in this bill, which is about civil liability.
And Representative Doe, I'd like to keep our conversation. You're doing a great job, not complaining. I just want to make sure we're talking about the task force. Do you have a further question?
Yes, and thank you. And I was actually, my question had to do with 2.12 and 2.13 of the bill, where, you know, the language said that the guardian shall have no personal or monetary liability. The other half of this is the conservators, as you know.
Yep.
And I was just curious if that immunity was provided, but we can move on.
Yeah. Did you have any questions about the task force?
I do.
All right. Yep. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. So can you talk, there's 16 members of this thing, and I think this is great. And for those testifiers that are a little bit afraid of this right now, you couldn't have a better author, I think, that is going to try to be willing to find the solution. There's a balance here. I mean, we have a need for guardians, and there's a need to protect those guardians. And what I don't see in the membership is I see a lot of advocates. I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 16 members. I don't know if we need as many members of the Minnesota House and Senate, actually. That's just my input. But having members from the courts, having members from the hospital associations, having more guardians on this membership on this task force, I think would provide a broader spectrum. I don't think. And again, I don't mean to be disrespectful to us. I don't know what value we bring, and being, you know, 25% of this board, I think that we could fill that board with more professionals that have a better understanding of these complex issues. So that's my only recommendation, and there's no further questions. But thank you for bringing this. Important.
Thank you very much. Are there any other member questions? Seeing none, Representative Feist, if you want to close up your bill.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, and I will continue to talk with the Council on Disability to make sure that we have the optimal makeup for this task force, because I think it is so important. In closing, I would like to just emphasize that a lot of conversations have been ongoing over the past 18 months. Since the Zika decision was 2022, it was final in, I believe, June of 2023. Those meetings have included attorneys, professional and private guardians, DHS, organizations and individuals representing the interests of guardians and people under guardianship, as well as disability and elder rights organizations. These groups have met continuously since since then. I've seen the emails. I've seen all the millions of people who are on those email blasts, as well as emails inviting folks who might have concerns to participate. Those include members of the disability community, attorneys, professional guardians, private guardians, the Minnesota Association for Guardianship and Conservatorship, Lutheran Social Services, Legal Aid, First Fiduciary, DHS, as I mentioned, consumer advocacy organizations, and again, individuals subject to guardianship. So this is not a knee-jerk reaction. This has been really well deliberated. But as you said, like, and as everyone said, I'm very committed to making sure that we calibrate this appropriately. And so I'm going to continue those conversations to make sure we get it right. But I do think it is urgent. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, House File 3483, as amended with the A6, is laid over. Thank you very much for coming to the committee today.
Thank you so much.
We will move on to House File 4273, Representative Finke. Welcome to the committee. And since you're not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 4273 be re-referred to the General Register. Would you like to talk to us about your bill?
Yes, thank you so much, Chair Cleavorn and members. This being my first time before the committee, for the record, my name is Lee Finke. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I am here to talk about House File 4273. This is a bill related to rainbows. Briefly, to walk through the bill, Section 1 defines what a rainbow is. And then sections 2, 3, and 4, and 5 say that if an individual wants to display a rainbow, they can. More specifically, this bill prohibits a local government from banning the display of rainbow flags, rainbow posters, or rainbow paraphernalia. The bill does not require anyone to display rainbows, nor does it supersede policies that prohibit the display of all banners, flags, or posters, etc. It just prohibits rainbows from being singled out and banned in schools, libraries, and other government spaces. And I think that we all know why we are hearing this bill today. The rainbow is a sign of hope and affirmation to the 2S LGBTQIA community, my community. For those outside of the queer community, it may seem trivial to legislate the definition and presence of rainbows. But in our community, depending on the circumstance, the value of a publicly visible rainbow on a doorway or window or classroom is literally impossible to overstate. This is true for queer folks of all ages, but it is especially true for our young people. For many queer kids, a rainbow flag or sticker and the corresponding knowledge that some adult somewhere accepts you for who you are is the only affirmation they receive at all. Some ban the rainbow because they want to avoid the complicating reality of queer identities. Others ban it because they truly do not want young queer people to feel affirmed. But the singling out of queer community and denying our visible affirmation is irresponsible and dangerous. A displayed rainbow is a very small act, yet it can have such a powerful life-giving impact to our community. It symbolizes a resilient past and the promise of an authentic future. It symbolizes belonging and community connection. It symbolizes visibility, authenticity, and pride in who we are. That is something we all deserve. And now we will turn it over to public testimony.
Thank you very much. And with us today, I'd like to call up Monica Meyer. Welcome to the committee. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Cleavorn and members of the committee. My name is Monica Meyer, and I'm the political director for gender justice. And I'm here to speak in support of House File 4273, prohibiting rainbow flag bans in public spaces. So gender justice works to dismantle the legal, structural, and cultural barriers that contribute to gender inequity in the Upper Midwest, and to ensure that that people of all genders have a meaningful right to bodily autonomy, safety, health, and opportunity. And this legislation helps advance that vision for our state. In 2023, state lawmakers in 49 states introduced over 500 bills attacking the rights of LGBTQ people, with over half of those targeting trans and non-binary youth for discrimination. Over 80 discriminatory laws in nearly half of the states in the U.S. were enacted in 2023, and more keep coming in 2024. These bills deny access to sports, critical health care, restrooms, legal recognition, and the right to openly exist in public schools. There are also many bills aimed at censoring educators and preventing schools from providing a safe and supportive environment for all students. These bills are attempting to erase trans and LGBTQ people and youth from public life. To get these bills enacted, elected officials and other public leaders spread harmful stereotypes that dehumanize trans and LGBTQ youth and adults. We know that when adults target trans and LGBTQ youth for discrimination, it sends the message loud and clear that it is wrong to be trans and LGBTQ. The public attacks on trans and LGBTQ youth lead to increased bullying and harassment and have devastating and alarming effects on the mental health and well-being of trans and LGBTQ youth. So in Minnesota, we're not immune to efforts to target trans and LGBTQ youth for discrimination, but through your work last year and the work of past legislatures, we've been a leader in enacting equal rights for trans and LGBTQ people. Currently, there are several school districts contemplating a ban on rainbow flags because these flags symbolize respect and inclusion for all, including trans and LGBTQ youth. Let's encourage our communities across the state to counter these efforts to censor educators and schools and silence community support for inclusion. Let's support and encourage schools and communities to publicly share that they are working for an equitable Minnesota where all people are valued and treated with dignity and respect. Please support this legislation, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Director Meyer. And next, we will have Kat Roan. Welcome to the committee. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Cleavorn and members of the committee. My name is Kat Roan. I use they or she pronouns, and I serve as executive director for Outfront Minnesota, our state's largest LGBTQ advocacy organization. I come to speak in support of this bill and to note the real and meaningful impacts that it will have. At a time when we've seen, as the previous testifier mentioned, multiple bills that have sought to restrict the rights and visibility of LGBTQ people, we have not been immune to that here in the state of Minnesota. And efforts to restrict the displays of rainbow flags, stickers, banners, and other symbols of support for LGBTQ youth have popped up in school districts around the state. As folks may have heard, a story out of Worthington, Minnesota, where a teacher had both a pride flag and a Puerto Rican flag removed from his classroom. We know that these incidents have popped up in multiple districts across the state over the past couple of years. And we believe that it's critically important that our LGBTQ youth in particular, but LGBTQ individuals in all communities, have access to these visual representations and symbols of support for them. We know that this bill will not mandate the display of rainbows in any spaces, but instead will allow folks who wish to show their solidarity and support to do so in a way that is very meaningful. We ask that you support this bill and encourage the continued visibility and support of our LGBTQ communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Roan. And next, we will have Hannah Edwards.
Good morning.
When you're ready, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Cleavorn and members of the committee. My name is Hannah Edwards, and I use she, her pronouns. Thank you for taking the time to listen about the importance of this bill. I am the executive director of Transforming Families Minnesota, which is a peer-led support network for trans and non-binary youth and their parents and caregivers. In this role, I listen to many different stories of hope, celebration, but also of fear and uncertainty when it comes to our trans students and their experiences at school. One thing we hear over and over again is how meaningful it is for them to see a rainbow displayed in their child's classroom. They share how they feel a little safer when their child is in a school building or a classroom that has a rainbow flag in the window or door. Our families are looking for clues that people will treat their children with kindness and respect. Really though, I am here today to tell my own story. I am the mom to Hildy, who is an amazingly strong, beautiful and loving trans 13-year-old, which if you ask her, makes her practically an adult. Hildy is in eighth grade, and we've had many experiences over her school life where a public display of a rainbow has made all the difference to her. When my daughter was in kindergarten, we fought for her rights as a trans kid to be safe at school and to enjoy basic decencies that her peers took for granted. When her school, Nova Classical Academy, became increasingly dangerous and harmful, we were forced to pull her from the school and file a human rights charge of discrimination with the city of St. Paul. Ultimately, the school was held accountable for violating her human rights. It was an incredibly scary time for our family. When we enrolled her in St. Paul Public Schools, she entered her new school watching with eagle-eye sharpness for indicators that teachers in that building had her back. A visual indication that she was finally safe. And as parents, we also started to look for the rainbows. It's such a small thing, but it made a huge difference to see something that communicated respect, safety, and community. I want to note that it took all of 30 seconds to see that display of compassion in St. Paul Public Schools, which made our family feel safe and welcome. Hildy's 13 now, like I said, and we've all moved on, and we feel a lot safer now than before. However, as we watch the news and see bands of pride flags and rainbows happening here in Minnesota, we can't help but think of the safety of other trans youth. We think of how safe we felt when we saw the rainbow and how all students and staff deserve to feel that safety as they learn. Thank you for considering the deep and meaningful impact that this will have for 2S LGBTQIA+ youth across the state of Minnesota.
Thank you for sharing your story and your testimony today. Next, we have Nicole Gaylor. Welcome to the committee, and when you're ready, state your name and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Nicole Gaylor. I use she, her pronouns, and I've been a first grade teacher for 16 years. I'm here in support of this bill to make rainbow flag bans prohibited. What does a rainbow flag mean to my students, my classroom? Here are some words from my first grade babies. It means my teacher will stand up for me. It looks like the flags at my house, so I feel home. It means we all are here together. My students feel the importance of windows and mirrors. I want every child, family, and staff member to have a clear visual of inclusion and safety in the community I build. We know students, families, and staff members need to feel safe in order to learn, thrive, and continue to share their talents with us. My rainbow flag stands for welcoming spaces, trust, resilience, compassion, joy, collaboration, and community without judgment. And don't we all want that for all kids? I will always have agency to represent all communities in my classroom. It's important my students see their own and their family's identities in my space. Whether that includes our mural of Black excellence, our land acknowledgement written with some of our Native families, or my rainbow flag stating you are loved. My students, especially those whose stories are often left out, must feel represented and important, and it seems absurd that someone could take away that humanity from my students. So, a piece of clarity from a former first grader, now 18, who still comes back to my safe space. Our rainbow flag means we'll always belong. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you very much for coming today and for your testimony. Okay, we will move on to member questions. Is there anyone else in the public that wanted to testify? Okay, we'll move on to member questions. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the author, maybe, well, just start with the author. Okay. We've got the letter here from Out Front Minnesota and calling the rainbow symbol and flags. My understanding is this is more than just flags. It could be
just a sign or something. Mm-hmm. You know, is it something symbolic, or is it political, or symbolic, or maybe a little bit of both?
Representative Finke.
Well, thank you, Chair Cleavorn, and for the question. And I think that that's a question that's going to have to be answered by the person. I don't believe that it's political. I don't believe that being a member of the queer community is an act of politics. I think it is an act of being a human. Human experience includes queer people. And to politicize the very existence, especially of queer young people, is a decision. It is not an inherent reality.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Just a couple of follow-ups. I think we'll be quick on time here. Representative Finke, are there any other flags or symbols that should have ban prohibitions? Is this the only one?
Oh, sorry. Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. I believe that there are other ones, but this bill is specifically coming from community. It is being requested, and it is the representative here who represents my community and leads our caucus. This is what we are here today to discuss.
Representative Kosnick, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that because I think there probably other people probably would be concerned or interested in having certain symbols that they hold deeply. They might be symbols, they might be virtual signaling, or they might be political, and you may have establishing, if this was to pass, would be establishing a precedent that I think might be troubling on other people's free speech. I wanted to just talk a little bit about section on page 2, generally 2.29, 2.23. Public schools are a non-public fora, and with your bill, you're introducing in a protected space to be free from overtly political, and I think we hold that should be independent. Some school districts even have policy about that political independence. This bill, I think, doesn't it infringe on that independence of certain schools? You in here specifically charter schools, but all other schools, and you go into the higher ed. Does this bill infringe on that non-public fora?
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. No, it doesn't. Actually, to the First Amendment point of your bill, of your question, I actually believe that the First Amendment already bans the removal of rainbow flags in any space, anywhere in the state of Minnesota, under the First Amendment, under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, and under the Minnesota Safe and Supportive Schools Act. Unfortunately, it is very common practice for schools to determine in their own political decisions whether or not to have a rainbow flag. So we are using the legislature here to reinforce what I strongly believe is already the law. But unlike Ms. Edwards here, I don't believe it is responsible for us to require elementary school families to bring lawsuits to have their basic rights protected.
Thank you. We have one other member with questions.
Yep. Just to follow up and finish off, I appreciate what your closely held beliefs are and why you're introducing this bill. I think it establishes, infringes actually, schools can have public policy that prohibits political speech. I think this moves towards that political speech, and it's been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. Independent School District 194 specifically has a policy in their non-public fora that the school district and facilities are non-public fora, are designated as reserved for the intended purpose of education and education-related activities, and that this has been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. I think this bill needs a lot more work because it does infringe on some of those areas that we uphold for education and to be independent of political activities. And so a lot of concerns here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Finke.
Yeah, I would just add that the bill does have explicit carve out for the idea that if you want to ban all expressive posters, flags, stickers, you can do that. What you can't do is say we won't allow rainbows. If you want to say nothing on the walls, that might be interpreted by as political by anyone, then you can fully ban everything. I would hope that we wouldn't do that. But we also know it's common practice to signal out the rainbow.
Thank you. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Cleveland, and thank you, Representative Finke, for bringing this forward. I just wanted to remind us that this is really not about somebody's closely held beliefs or what they think about themselves or their identity or a whole community. It's really about creating spaces that are safe for people. I remember I grew up in the – I was born in the 70s. I'm pretty old now. And I grew up in the 80s, and I remembered that there was a time in which the children weren't safe, and you could put stars in your windows and to tell people, like, this is a safe place for you. So if you're walking home and you're not safe, especially as a little girl – and there were times where I've actually knocked on a door because, like, you know, when I was growing up, it was really racist, right? People would call me gook coming home from school. They would tell us we were chinks and that we were, you know, taking jobs from Americans. And it was really unsafe as a child. And that there was a time where I actually went to one of those doors that had a star that said to me I was safe in that space until I could walk the rest of the way home. I think that this is so similar to that, that we're just saying this rainbow flag doesn't mean, you know, like, a specific identity or somebody's belief. It is that it signals for a child or a person this is a safe space for them. And I think that especially children need that, and I needed that, and I really appreciate that this is something that really allows anybody, and whether you are LGBTQ or not, sometimes an ally might need to know that they're in a safe space and that this is a place I can go. And so this is not just for our community. This is for all of us who are looking for a place in which we can feel welcomed and accepted. So I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you, and I just want to acknowledge the story that you've just told, and I'm very sorry that you had that experience, especially as a child. No child should experience that, so I'm glad that Gold Star was there to let you know you were safe. Are there any further questions or discussion? Seeing none, I will renew my motion to refer House File 4273 to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Madam Chair, this affects schools.
We were in the middle of a vote.
Well, okay, but for the record, Madam Chair, if you would give me some leeway, this is the problem why we're having to fix so many bills this year, because we jammed things through. We just had a consequential bill yesterday that skipped an important committee. This bill should go to the Education Committee.
Hearing no opposition, the bill is re-referred to.
There is opposition.
Madam Chair, could I ask that you take the vote again, because you were interrupted midway and you did not ask for nays?
So when interrupted in a vote for a different conversation completely about a bill that was on the floor yesterday or discussed in another committee, that is not appropriate.
Madam Chair, I would make a motion to reconsider and take the vote again, because you were interrupted, whether it was it's incontrovertible. You did not ask for no votes.
I did ask for no votes.
I did not hear that.
That's so because your member was interrupting.
Well, Madam Chair, it's an easily remedied situation. You can simply take the vote again, and because there is opposition to this bill, it would be fair to the minority to take the vote again.
Lead Nash, you and I have had a great working relationship. We do have a great working relationship. And you know my policy about not using this committee for other political speech. We discuss the bills before us. We discuss the work before us.
And Madam Chair, I am simply saying that my side of the aisle would like to have its voice on this bill heard. You just said that you heard no opposition, and yet Representative Kosnick talked about his concern, and which could be
he was referring to another
Madam
bill.
Madam Chair, his testimony earlier, his line of questioning clearly indicated that he was opposed, and we would like for you simply to reconsider, take the vote again, so that my side can register our votes. If they choose to vote no, then let it be. But you did not, you just said hearing no opposition, and yet Representative Kosnick's concerns earlier would clearly indicate opposition.
Representative Nash, I will say this to you. I was in the middle of a vote when Representative Kosnick asked for leeway. I thought it was referring to the bill before us, so I granted grace. And then when I realized it was not about the bill before us, but about how we work in the House, which is not the topic before us at this moment, I said, is there any opposition? And I heard none.
Well, Madam Chair.
I will, let's do.
Madam Chair, and I respect the chair, and we're here, we've got plenty of time here to take a vote. I didn't know that the motion was to refer to the general register. I should have called for a point of order, perhaps. I didn't mean to interrupt, and in fact, I was still talking, and you jumped in on me. But I think I would like to make the motion to refer to the Education Committee.
That is not a motion that we are going to entertain.
And
vote has been called. So if
you and there were, according to you in the voice record, there was no opposition, which I disagree with. A member of the committee voting on the prevailing side, according to your no opposition, requested a revote. A reconsideration. You have the votes to win. This is all we have is to have the discussion and make the point. Please don't be afraid of that.
I'm not afraid of anything. What I don't want, and what I have said from the very beginning of becoming a chair, is this committee is not to be used for theater. And this committee is not to be used to score political points. That's not the work that we're here to do, and that is not the work of Minnesotans. If we have legitimate concerns about a bill before us, which I did hear you voice earlier, then that is something that we discuss in committee. But it is not a committee where I'm going to tolerate anything else but the work of the people. So to that point, and to be fair to your members, I will entertain a motion to have a new vote on this bill, if that is a motion I can entertain. And I will give you an opportunity to do this. But I assure you, if this happens again in the rest of this year, I will not be lenient, because that is not the work. And Representative Nash, you and I have a great relationship, and I want to keep that. So consider this a courtesy to your side of the table. And with that, I would entertain a motion to reconsider the vote.
Okay, I just wanted to
make sure we get the motion right. Chair Freiberg, would you like to make the motion?
So this is a motion to reconsider, and a yes vote would just bring us then to a second vote on the bill itself.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is what we're voting on. And to that motion, all of those in favor to reconsider the vote, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails. Now, the bill before us is House File 4273, and the motion before us is to re-refer the bill to the General Register. All of those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
The ayes have it, the motion prevails, and House File 4273 is re-referred to the General Register. And with that, members, that concludes the work that we have before us today. Our next meeting will be on Thursday, March 7th. And with that, we are adjourned.